south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, it figures everyone's pumping me for news about what's happening with the coronavirus in Latin America, and of course, how it's affecting gringos and expats. That's the point. So let's jump right into it. Starting with news from Ecuador, one of the hardest hit places in all Latin America concerning the virus. Now, of course, you heard me say on last week's show that things are opening up, some places little by little and some places in a big way. So then what about Ecuador, a place that's really been hit hard? Well, the health minister said today that 90% of virus victims have recovered. In fact, here's his quote. His name is Juan Carlos Zivalos. He says, quote, 90% of the people who have tested positive for COVID have recovered. Of the 38,471 confirmed cases as of today, he's talking about the last Thursday in May, 34,522 citizens have overcome the disease, he said, adding, it's easy to become alarmed by the total number of infections, but it's more important to know that the vast majority of victims have recovered. Of course, that's good news, and as you probably remember, South America has been hit a lot harder than Central America, and it was hit about 4 to 6 weeks later than Central America, too. So South America is kind of like the last man standing, or falling. Depends how you look at it. But I'll tell you, the social distancing thing is really getting on Latin Americans' nerves. You know, it's against their culture not to hug, touch, kiss, and constantly violate what us gringos and expats firmly believe is our personal space. In fact, the other day I was in a Price Mart, a.k.a. Costco in the U.S. Now, get this. I walked into one of their big elevators, and I saw on the floor they'd placed X's where people were supposed to stand. All right, I know some of you are thinking that's good. They're maintaining that distance by pointing out a space. However, you have to know that at least 99% of elevators in this world are less than 6 feet or about 2 meters wide and deep. Well, that certainly wreaks havoc with the social distancing thing now, doesn't it? Now, as far as social distancing here in Latin America, like most things in the third world, the government just doesn't have it together, nor do many businesses. When it comes to social distancing, sometimes it's 6 feet or about 2 meters, and sometimes it's 1 meter. That's 39 inches, slightly over 3 feet. So what's it going to be, you numbskull bureaucrats out there, 6 feet or 3 feet? Admittedly, I've seen and read that most places are talking about 6 feet or 2 meters, slightly over 6 feet. So that means technically, for a standard elevator, about 95% of them, you're only allowed one person in an elevator at a time. So that elevator in Price Mart that had five X's on the floor was violating all the so-called social distancing rules. Unless, suddenly for elevators, it's now 3 feet. And actually, that 1 meter measurement was from the center of each X to the center of the others. That's totally misleading because once you're in the X, your body sticks out about a foot from the center of the X. So now you've closed the social distancing gap to less than 2 feet.
Duh.
Not that I care or it bothers me all that much, especially when it comes to masks. As for me, when I wear one, I never cover my nose. I just let it hang down over my mouth, and no one's ever called me on it. Oh, and get this. When I walked into Costco, known as Price Mart down here, after only about 10 paces, one of the rent-a-cops waved me over. I looked at him and said, what? And he pointed to a plastic tub, looked like a kitty litter box. And I watched as the next guy walking in stepped into that thing, walked around in it for a bit, and headed into the store. And that rent-a-cop pointed at me to do the same. And I'm thinking, what the f***? That makes absolutely no sense at all. Neither biologically, chemically, nor at a microscopic level. Think about what's happening there. You're mixing all the crap that's stuck to your shoes with everybody else's crap that's stuck to their shoes, concentrating it in a kitty litter box that contains something that looks exactly like kitty litter. I'm sure it was. Then you're dragging all that stuff into the store anyway. And if you've got shoes with tread on them, some of that stuff will jam into your tread and stick there. That means you'll be dragging small, even microscopic parts of it into your car and probably into your house, too. What the f***? Have any of you seen that yet up in the States? Remember, we're talking about a first world franchise chain, Costco. You have to wonder, who's coming up with these things? Now, over the last few weeks, I've been in and out of a lot of stores and businesses, and that's the first time I've ever seen that. Talk about stupidity and overdrive. But as far as social distancing, it seems like no one here in Latin America can rigidly uphold those standards, whatever they are. First off, I don't know how you could have two social distancing parameters, 6 feet or 3 feet, 2 meters or 1 meter. Go figure, huh? But then again, this is Latin America, although maybe it's happening up by you too. I don't know about up in the States, but down here, when you walk into a kind of normal, organized business like a bank, Walmart, Costco, fast food joint, appliance or variety store, it's very commonplace to see at the checkout line, or in the case of a bank at a cashier window, that they've placed yellow tape lines on the floor and X's where you're supposed to stand as you're checking out or doing business at a cashier window. The question is, are those spaced out lines on the floor going to remain forever? And what about those plastic barriers and bags that some people are enclosed in? You've seen them at checkout and cashier stations. What are they going to do at resorts and tourist spots? Put lines and markings in the bottom of pools so people social distance while they swim? Oh, and last time you went out, how many times did you violate the social distancing rule? How about when you're in a buffet line at an all-inclusive resort where they've got thousands of people staying there and wanting to eat at the same time? What about waiters coming up to your table, dropping off plates, pouring coffee and water? They just violated your precious personal space, and the same thing happens whenever you pass your credit card or money to a cashier, waitress, or anyone. All right, speaking of social distancing, I came across something very interesting. Well, to me at least. I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it, too. Did you know, in the earliest days of George Washington's administration, remember, first president of the U.S., in 1789, he decided to visit every state in the Union and permit people to see him up front and personal and shake hands with him. Why? Because he wanted to monitor public opinion and see what people on the street thought of the new Constitution and government. So in 1789, he mapped out a month-long tour of New England, followed by a month-long tour of the southern states. So basically, he went out on a handshaking and baby-kissing tour. Now, here's the part I'm sure you'll get a kick out of. On this first trip to see all the states, he rode through the countryside in an open carriage, attended by a few military personnel and six servants. Behind him, a large baggage wagon with a single giant white purebred horse in the rear. And a couple of miles before they entered each town, Washington would put on his general's uniform, get out of the carriage, mount the white steed. He'd enter each town as the conquering hero, followed by his caravan. But get this. When he entered Boston, Massachusetts on his white stallion, Washington had come down with a cold and a severe eye inflammation. Even before he left New York, he'd received reports of an epidemic cold or flu gripping the New England states. And when he entered Boston, so many citizens were wheezing with heavy coughs and chest colds that the illness was dubbed, forever after, the President's Cough, or Washington's Influenza, Washington's Flu, to which Washington himself succumbed. And when Washington donned a handkerchief to cover his face, so did the entire crowd that gathered to greet him. So the question is, does that mean posterity might call the Corona 2020 episode Trump's flu? Trump's influenza? Trump's cough? Is that what his legacy will be? Kind of makes you wonder how social distancing would have gone down with the colonial crowd. Remember, in 1779, they had no smartphones, Netflix, or, come to think of it, toilet paper. Hadn't been invented yet. So then what did they use? Well, it wasn't the pages from the Sears catalog. That didn't come for another 100 years. In 1887, Sears published its first catalog. It was the Amazon of its day. Though instead of 2 day or day after delivery, it took from 2 to 6 months. Considered a miracle of the modern age back then. So for those of you who might say, oh, for the good old days, you really haven't done your homework, have you? But back to Latin American social distancing. Man, I'm telling you right now, Latinas are suffering. Think about it. They love to dance. And that violates every social distancing rule. And really, the only kind of modern dancing that doesn't involve close-up touching, rubbing, grinding, and possible exchange of bodily fluids are some of those good old boy country line dances you only find up in the States. So again, I repeat, Latinas are really suffering. Matter of fact, Latinas are so into dancing. I can't tell you how many times, must have been hundreds, where I've been in a mall or walking down the street, in a clothing store, a cafeteria, in a restaurant, someone's house, even in a car, and a certain song would come on. All of a sudden, some Latina in a room would break into a dance. Doesn't matter who's around, if they know the people or not. Maybe only for 5 or 10 seconds, but it would happen. little kids do it all the time, too. And believe me, when Latinas spontaneously break into a dance, it's not that everyone stops and looks or takes notice. It's just a natural part of life here. Oh, and I'll tell you, every gringo I've ever known who's had a Latina girlfriend, they'll tell you the same thing. They'll hear a song, bust a move for a couple of seconds, look at you and smile, and go right back to what they were doing. Now, when I used to live back in Chicago, in that white bread neighborhood of mine, I never experienced anything like that. Of course, I could be wrong. I haven't lived there for 30 years. But, you know, I've got three good-looking white bread sisters, and not only would they never pull anything like that, when they'd see a hot Latina dressed to the nines, in Chicago I'm talking about now, they'd always have a sly comment. Look what she's got on. I could never get away with wearing something like that. It was always more of a cut than a compliment. Obviously born out of competition and a bit of jealousy, too. And, you know, when I'd ask my sisters to expound on that a little bit, they'd say, it's a Latina thing. It's not our style. They got that right. Oh, and speaking of dancing, here's something off topic, but what else is new? Since the name George Washington came up, you know what his favorite pastime was? Dancing. He admitted it himself many times. In fact, many of his contemporaries testified that he was so obsessed about dancing. He was once clocked at a party doing a marathon minuet for 2.5 hours straight. He never got off the floor. I know, it's hard to imagine the guy on the $1 bill cutting a rug like that. Talk about dancing with the stars, huh? Crazier yet is that he had that kind of energy and stamina. When, by 1789, his first year as president, it's documented by his dentist that he only had one natural tooth left in his mouth. What's that got to do with Latin America? Nothing, but I'm sure even back then, compared to Latinos, colonials could not dance. Now, back then it was true. The average person did not live all that long. The average lifespan, 45 years. But, get this, if you lived to the age of 5, average lifespan would be 75. So it was the childhood diseases that skewed the numbers drastically. And believe it or not, back in the revolutionary times, there was one vaccine. Yes, one. Can you guess? Smallpox. And get this, Washington ordered that every one of his Continental soldiers in the Revolutionary War have a smallpox vaccination. You know how they did it? They would take a person who had a really mild case of smallpox, just 3 or 4 pockmarks, and they'd use him to inoculate the others. You know the old saying, or maybe you don't. A pox on your family or a pox on your house? That was a horrible insult, fighting words, because so many people who got smallpox had hundreds of pustules. And if you didn't die from it, you'd end up with horrible scars. Anyway, they take a person with a real light case of it, maybe 3 or 4 pustules on their whole body, and they take a needle and thread, puncture one of those pustules. Ugh. And they take that needle and pass it through the skin of a number of soldiers. That's how they did it with the Continental Army. And then in a week or so, that person would have a pustule or 2 or 10 on his body, but it would be self-limiting because the donor had a weak case of the disease. But here's the point. Speaking of vaccines, if, as history shows us, by the time you reach 5, your average lifespan will be 75 years, at least in the United States, way back when. We're talking way back when, before modern medicine. Now, if you reason through that argument yourself, it goes like this. If you were born before the age of modern medicine and you reached the ripe old age of 5, you'd have a very good chance of reaching 75 years old without any vaccinations at all because they didn't exist. Stop a second and let that sink in. The average lifespan for a person who'd reached the age of 5 was 75 years old. By the way, Washington himself, when he was younger, got smallpox. He had not been inoculated with the vaccine. He recovered, but he had lots of pox scars all over his body, and quite a few of them on his face. Luckily for him, photography had not been invented yet. Because, you see, all the portraits made of George Washington were retouched by the artist so that you didn't see some of the bigger pockmarks on his face. So there you have it. Even in colonial times, artists would flatter, or for lack of a better term, Photoshop, their subjects to make people better looking or more attractive than they really were. Shades of the retardassians, huh? Well, I guess it was the practical thing to do in case your subject was a royal and didn't like your portrait. I mean, look, you wouldn't want to paint the king or queen's picture and then get hung for it afterward. But I digress as usual. Probably digressed more than I've ever done before. Sorry about that. Do drop me a line if you think I'm digressing way too much. I mean, this is about Latin America, right? I don't want you guys or gals to lose faith in the subject matter or for that matter, me. So let's get back to talking about the coronavirus and how it's affecting gringos and expats here in Latin America. Let's start with this email I just got from expat Frank. He says, Don Johnny, just wanted to say thanks for helping me to get to Guatemala. Now that the shite has hit the ventilator and the reset button has been smished. Yeah, he said smished. I guess you could say that. Then he says, it's great to be where the restrictions are much less enforced, and with luck, in time, will be so small as to seem irrelevant. Then he says, although a lot of people, he's probably talking about gringos and expats there, because he's living just outside of Antigua, Guatemala. It's the one place in Guatemala that's more concentrated with gringos than any other. Anyways, he says, a lot of people thought it might be impossible to go out for a walk this weekend during the shutdown. He says, Johnny, our mutual lawyer friend informed me that the restrictions should only apply to automobiles, not folks who want to just get outside and take a walk for exercise. You see, Johnny, out here where I live, outside of Antigua, Guatemala, it's especially easy and enjoyable to just go outside and walk. Though, despite my girlfriend and her sister and my Uber driver all being terrorized by COVID, and the latter thinking I would be attacked by native opportunists, I was able to go out strolling this morning for an hour, with no problems or incidents whatsoever. It seemed like there were more vehicles out than there would normally be. All right, then he says, on the south leg of my walk, I passed a set of plastic barriers that were supposed to, I think, block the southbound traffic lane. But no one was there when I passed it the first time. However, on the way back, I noticed two local policemen were there. So I just crossed to the other side of the road, put my mask in place, which I wear but uncover my nose and mouth to breathe better. And I just kept strolling. The police never moved or said a thing. And here we were supposed to be on lockdown. And then, Johnny, about a block or two farther along, I did what I usually do. I uncovered my nose and mouth and kept strolling. And, Johnny, the northern entrance to my pueblo has police checking passengers and incoming vehicles. They check the temperature of the passengers and the drivers with one of those pistol grip things. They also seem to want to spray everyone's hands with either hand sanitizer or alcohol. Now, the south entrance to my pueblo or neighborhood is technically blocked. There's a barrier, but you can easily crawl under it. Oh, and Johnny, I have to laugh at all the gringos and expats on Facebook. Yep, of course. Fakebook has a Guatemalan expat group. Don't they all? So many of these panicky chicken shits are talking about catching repatriation flights back to the U.S. Because, you know, the sky is falling, right? Bunch of pussies. As for me, I exchange messages with my sister in California. They're all confined to their homes for the most part up there. They're panicking too, though I believe essential workers are on the job. The thing is, Johnny, a lot of these gringos and expats using repatriation flights, they're easily spooked when they hear there's going to be some kind of lockdown. The thing is, here in Guatemala, a week or so back, the president threw a three-day weekend lockdown. After that, he received lots and lots of protests and said he wouldn't do it again without plenty of advance notice. Meanwhile, California and so many other states have been under continuous lockdowns. They're having trouble buying things that I can get down here in Guatemala. And for those few things I can't get, I just mail order from Amazon or through other online sellers that I receive through my Miami mailbox. So anyway, Johnny, thanks again for getting me the hell out of Dodge. Happy as a clam and sneering all the way? Frank. Well, thanks for that, Frank. By the way, Frank's been in Guatemala, near Antigua, Guatemala, living the good life for, I think, about 5 years now. And as you can see, he's not one to panic. Speaking of getting out of Dodge, let me throw in a plug here for my Expat Insider Seminar. It starts August 21st, that's a Friday, and ends on August 27th. That's a Thursday night. If you come down, you know you'll be drinking from the fire hose, but you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B. And believe it or not, at every seminar I've had, and this will be number 18, one or more participants never leaves. In other words, they come down with their bags and boxes and say, Johnny, I'm here. I'm not going back. Let's get started. Now, think about it. Do you think a person would do that all on his own? I'd say the chance is close to zero. Why? Because you need a network, you need some friends, and real-life examples of people who've done it before. So you don't spin your wheels or make any costly mistakes. Hey, I made my mistakes, and I lost a lot of dough too, but luckily, it all happened in the first 5 years I was down here. That's why I always say, by coming to the seminar, the three biggest advantages you're going to have over other people starting off with their plan B is, number one, you'll meet a very bright group of like-minded people to share things and hang with, and some of them will become lifelong friends. Number two, you'll meet an honest Latin lawyer. Sometimes that's mission impossible when you're trying to do it on your own. And number three, you'll hear from me over and over what not to do. And that advice itself is sure to save you tens of thousands of dollars. People have told me that over and over again. So get your Plan B off and running and on steroids. Come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. And remember, the early bird discounts are in effect all this month of June. Then, on July 1st, they revert back to normal prices. Check it out at expatplanb.com. Oh, and I'm still looking for a lady attendee who might want to save $750 off the single price of the seminar by sharing double occupancy with a lady who's looking for a roommate. So if you're a single lady looking to save some money, send me an email, theexpatfinals@gmail.com, and we'll try to work it out. Now, speaking of what not to do when you come down here to Latin America, you know, when you look at the business opportunities here, and there are so many, a lot of people, I mean a lot of gringos and expats, think minerals, mining, and natural resources are the way to go. And well, I can tell you from personal experience, I have some gringo friends who came down many years ago and made their fortune in mining and mineral rights. But now, these days, I would say, cross that off your list. I don't recommend it. One of the main reasons is, even if you have a nice plot of land and have discovered some kind of mineral resource, and it's totally legal, you've got the right government paperwork, and now all you've got to do is bring in a crew and some machinery and get the stuff out. Well, these days, that ain't the half of it. Politics have taken over. Green politics, I should say. Because you see, down here in Latin America now, there are virtually thousands of NGOs. It stands for non-governmental organization. They're basically tax-free quasi-charity organizations, though most of them, like the Clinton Foundation, are pure scams. Though many of them at first are started by do-gooders, and there's nothing wrong with that. But all of them, it seems, in time turn into big bureaucratic scams. Problem is, and you can look at this a lot of different ways, a lot of them here in the third world are radicalizing indigenous people against mining and exploiting natural resources. But it's a double-edged sword because the indigenous people need the jobs and the infrastructure. However, they don't want the environmental destruction that almost always seems to come with it, and you can't blame them. Problem is, if you got a right to mine, and you've got the permits, and you've got the land, governments are backed up by police and military. And if you've got a legal permit to mine or build a power plant, whatever, that makes for built-in conflicts with the locals, often involving sabotage and physical confrontations. And believe me, you don't want to get involved in any of that. So really, stay away from mining and mining rights businesses, because these days, you're more than likely to run into friction, even violence, from organized indigenous groups. Though I have to agree, when mining companies come in, they do a lot of environmental damage. Because here in Latin America, when you're way out in the boonies, there really are no watchdogs. Not to mention government officials are so easily corrupted. But the other side of the coin is, most all these mining outfits put down roads, build schools and clinics, set up drainage and water purification plants as part of the deal. But mining operations have toxic waste products too. There's no way out of it. That's what mining is. Dig big holes and trenches and use a lot of water and chemicals. So then who's right? Well, it's never black and white. It's never clear. I repeat, don't get involved in the mining business. It's too politically charged. I'm talking from experience because I was involved in a fledgling jade mine project that never got off the ground because of politics. If you come down to my Expat Insider Seminar, ask me about it. You'll be shocked. Anyway, just to drive the point home, I'm going to read a little article that just came out. I'll paraphrase it here, but it will shock you. It says, 5 national police officers were kidnapped near the Rio Blanco gold and silver mine near Mulatiro, Ecuador, on Saturday. A patrol car was destroyed as well. Investigators say the crime was committed by anti-mining terrorists who are being sought by Special Operations Judicial Police. It all started last week when police had been called to a disturbance near the shuttered mine in the Cajas Mountains when they were ambushed by a group of masked men with guns and knives. The kidnappers forced the 5 men from their car before pushing it into a ravine where it was later burned. 2 of the officers escaped, but 3 were stripped of their uniforms and beaten, and 1 suffered a gunshot wound to the leg. A rescue team found the injured men Sunday. The kidnapping occurred on the day of a community meeting during which residents erected Protect Communal Area signs and Water is Not Gold signs on mine property. Then it says protests had also closed the mine back in June 2018. Now, here's the other angle to the story. It says the mine, which had been closed due to protests in 2018, was recently bought out and scheduled to be reactivated, this time operated by the Chinese company Equigold Mining Junefield Corporation. So then why are there mining terrorists here and why are they protesting? It's because residents claim the mine was polluting their crops and pasture land. That, despite claims by the new Chinese owner, there is and has never been water contamination. Meanwhile, organizers and protesters of Saturday meeting said residents would close the mine again if the Chinese reopen it, saying that the community is in complete solidarity against all Chinese mining interests. All right, so the locals say their water is being contaminated, and it probably is. I've seen those operations. Problem is, the previous administration, Correa, who's a fugitive now, you know, he's in Belgium, I think, convicted for graft and corruption in absentia, but you knew that already, right? Well, he, along with the present president, Moreno, have made all kinds of deals and taken all kinds of loans from the Chinese. They've got the mining rights in Ecuador locked up, and the loans are collateralized with Ecuadorian oil. And we all know the Chinese have a terrible human rights record. But we also know that Ecuador has a huge debt and is totally broke due to corruption and the government spending like a drunken sailor and the historic low price of oil. Now, talking to some of my gringo expat mining buddies who've been in the business a long time, at least 20 years, they're saying the same things. The gringos, expats, and Europeans are getting out of the mining business and selling out to guess who? The Chinese. And the question at first was, if it's so unacceptable to mine near their towns and villages for contamination or whatever reasons, why would the Chinese want to jump in and take on all that heat? Well, that's because according to one of my mining buddies, he says the Chinese aren't worried about making a profit right now. They've got 5, 10, and 20-year plans. They figure if they buy up the rights and can't open the mine right away, they just close it down and wait for the country to get more and more in debt, to them, of course, and for the local poor folks around the mine to get more and more desperate until at some time in the future, they throw in the towel and say, please, open the mine. We need the jobs. We need the money. Worse yet, my buddy told me, if the locals still hold out and still protest, the Chinese will do what they're doing in Africa right now. They'll build their own little town around the mining camp and ship in 1,000 of their own Chinese workers. That way they can run the project without any local involvement at all. And that too, in most cases, would be perfectly legal. So, it's a complicated issue. The Chinese have the dough, the upper hand, and they aren't stupid. So don't be surprised if you're down here in Latin America driving around in mining country and you start seeing road signs in Mandarin. So then who can you blame for a country willing to sell out its patrimony? Corrupt, lard-ass government officials. Who else? South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.